Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, so I'm going to talk a little bit today about the difference between theoretical and technical eclecticism in therapy. And I know that those are kind of strange words, and if you're not a therapist or in the mental health field, this might sound a little bit strange, so I want to kind of define my terms to start. So eclecticism, we'll just start with that word. It's just kind of our word for like, it's an assembly of a whole bunch of things kind of thrown together, or a hodgepodge is a way to say it. I realize that I'm maybe dating myself with that kind of a phrase, a hodgepodge, that feels very not Gen Z. So apologies to any young watchers out there. But yeah, it's just an assembly of a whole bunch of things, pulling from all these different approaches. And then when we break this down into theoretical and technical eclecticism, so technical eclecticism would be something like, okay, you've got all these different approaches. We've got the cognitive behavioral approach, and you've got gestalt therapy, and you've got Adlerian therapy, and you've got psychodynamic therapy, and you've got dialectical behavior therapy, and I mean all these, you know, wide range of things. And all of those approaches, they have particular techniques that they offer. Like me as an Adlerian therapist, there are certain techniques that Adlerians use with regularity. You know, when we could talk about perhaps what some of those are. But, you know, like, let's say a cognitive behavioral therapist, they're going to have certain techniques that they use. A gestalt therapist, they're going to do empty chair or something like that. And psychodynamic folks, they're going to do, dream analysis and in a particular way that might be different than the gestalt folks or the Adlerian folks or so on and so forth. Okay. So you've got all these techniques, and so a technical eclecticism is that you borrow techniques from all of these different approaches. And then when we're talking about theoretical eclecticism, what we're talking about is borrowing a bunch of concepts and ideas from all of these different approaches. Now, I'll tell you what a former professor of mine told me one time. He was a strong advocate for technical eclecticism, and I am as well. I think that it is a great idea to borrow techniques and skills from a multitude of approaches, because people are just really creative and they come up with some really, really cool ideas. And I would add to this that one way in which we can be technically eclectic is that we can also invent our own techniques. And if anybody ever tells you that it is off the table to invent your own techniques as a therapist, I would tell them to go kick rocks, because this is, of course, how any technique ever started, is that somebody tried it, somebody invented it, somebody tested it out. Of course, we do this thoughtfully, we do this ethically, we do this with some level of caution and care, but we can be creative in what we do. And so that's even maybe a way to be technically eclectic, is to be inventive and creative. Okay, now, so my former professor, he's a strong advocate for technical eclecticism, but he said, when people talk about being theoretically eclectic, there is a word for that, and it is confused. And it's humorous, and you could say, okay, that's a little harsh, but you would be my case that it's not harsh. At their core, what a theoretical orientation is, and again, for folks not in the mental health field, what that means is that there are all these theories of human behavior and psychological functioning. Okay, you've got Freudian theory and Adlerian theory and Jungian theory, and you've got Gestalt, which that's from Fritz Perls, and you've got cognitive theory, and you've got behavioral psychology, and you've got this, I mean, just this wide range. Okay, and what those orientations are at their core is that they are answers to two fundamental questions. And those questions are these: why do people do what they do? And that's kind of the explanatory or case conceptualization piece, okay? And then there's the second question is, and how do people change? And that is the, we'll call that maybe the intervention level. So we've got explanation and case conceptualization, and then we've got treatment interventions. And that's that's basically what a psychological theory is that it's those two things. We conceptualize the case, and then we decide what we're going to do about it. And the reality is that, of course, there is an immense amount of overlap in between these different theoretical approaches and orientations. And, you know, I would be the first to tell you that there's a lot of overlap. There also are very, very fundamental differences in terms of how these approaches can, you know, answer those questions, why people do what they do and how people go about changing. I want to be clear that I have no real interest in, you know, putting down an approach, any approach that is helpful to humankind. I have no beef with an approach that is helpful to human beings, both as individuals and then in a community, and certainly as a global community. If a theory or a technique is helping people to flourish, I'm on board. I have no issue with that. What I have seen is that when people are theoretically eclectic, meaning that they borrow ideas from all of these different approaches, what ends up happening is that they are simply, it's not just that they're confused, it's that they're inconsistent. And when you're inconsistent, one of the things that that does is that that means that as a clinician, you are not committed to a certain way of conceptualizing the case, a method of conceptualizing a case. And what that means is that you're also not committed to a way of figuring out what treatment interventions are going to be most helpful. So then you kind of take the spaghetti against the wall approach and you just throw up there and you kind of see what sticks. And this is highly inefficient. It costs our clients time. It costs them money, sometimes a lot of money. People, you know, maybe they spend 5 years in a weekly therapy when if someone would have just committed to a focused approach, they could have identified a few, you know, conceptualized the case in a fundamentally, theoretically sound way. I'm not saying the only right way, but a right way, a sound way of conceptualizing the case, selected in light of the, you know, that conceptualization, a few interventions, really hammered away and committed to those interventions. Okay, and then you get down the road and people can really feel a bit better and get back to contributing as members of the human community. And that's the goal. So I want to paint a picture for you of how this would look. Okay, if we think about classical Freudian psychoanalysis, okay, why do people do what they do? Well, they do what they do because they have inside them these three parts. Okay, they've got an id, and that's kind of our primal, you know, we'll stick with primal, our primal desires. Okay, I want to eat, I want to fight, I want to have sex, I want to do X, Y, and Z. Okay, and so that's there. And then we've got the superego, and these are, let's say, something like the internalized moralistic cultural pressures that say, okay, yes, you want to have sex, but you can't because that's out of bounds. So again, a classic Freudian psychoanalysis, what maybe that looks like is, well, you want to have sex with your mother, but that's taboo. You can't do it. And so these are in tension with each other, okay? And then what we've got is this mediating factor of the ego, okay? And then whether or not these things are in balance determines what ends up happening. So, okay, you've got some neurotic disorder. Well, what that, you know, Freud says, well, the problem is that the id is not getting its proper due. And so the superego is overdeveloped here, and it's just, you know, really flexing its muscles, and it's you know, powering down the id, and so then the id, it comes out in these other ways. You know, your arm goes numb or something. I don't know. Okay, so then how do people change? Well, you make the unconscious conscious. So you take this unconscious id stuff that's been repressed, and you make it conscious so that it can be properly expressed, and then you strengthen the ego, and this allows things to get balanced out. So fundamentally, what Freud's doing is he's saying, here's Freudian treatment. We explore the unconscious and we strengthen the ego. That's what we do. Okay, now, look, you can make the case. I'm sure that there are Freudians out there who would make the case, yeah, and he was right about those things. And I've got 50 case studies to show you that would demonstrate that he's correct. Okay, again, I have no beef with any approach that helps humankind to flourish. But that is a fundamentally different understanding of what is going on with people than, let's say, a behaviorist who says that, okay, why people do what they do is that people's behavior is the product of their reinforcement histories. And so how people change is that you design a reinforcement history in order to, or a new reinforcement schedule to evoke a certain behavior. Okay, now, again, you could, like, there are behaviorists out there and they've got mountains of research to say yes, and that's correct, and so on and so forth. And I think all of this is up for, you know, healthy debate. I have no beef with any approach that helps humankind to flourish. But what I am saying is that these fundamentally, is there overlap between those two approaches? Absolutely there is. Are they fundamentally compatible with each other? No. If you blend the two approaches, does that lead to an unfocused approach to therapeutic work? I think it is, it's my opinion, and I would invite feedback here, but I think unequivocally, yes. And again, that's not just about efficiency being the highest value. I don't hold efficiency as a particularly high value just as a person, but it costs our clients care. It costs them time during which they are suffering. So it costs them pain and suffering. It costs them time, and it also costs them money. And this is significant. And so this is why one of the things that I do some supervisory work for clinicians who are pursuing licensure in the state of South Carolina where I work. And I ask all of my supervisees, I guess I'm not quite as insistent on this perhaps as I should be, but I do ask them to develop a sound theoretical orientation. And by that, what I mean is that I want them to have robust answers that feel right to them in how they see the world. I want them to be able to answer the question, how do people do what they do? Why do people do what they do? And how do they change? And I make very clear that the answer, it depends. What that means is that you don't know yet. And that's okay. You know, like, there's time to develop and grow. And I hope that my answers aren't precisely what they are today. I hope that they continue to change and develop, at least in some nuanced ways. But I do think that I'm a big fan of technical eclecticism, but I am concerned about the potential dangers of theoretical eclecticism. And it is my firm opinion that our mental health system and world, I think we would do much better by our clients if we would insist upon, for ourselves, not for others, but for ourselves, that we have robust answers to those questions. And then out of those questions, we would conceptualize cases and have a focused approach to selecting treatment interventions. So my two cents, well, would welcome any disagreement and pushback, but just a few brief thoughts on that. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.